5 minutes past 3. Call the meeting in order of the Higher Education Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee. We do have a quorum, so we will officially proceed. First item of business will be the minutes from the January 17th meeting. Anyway, make a motion to approve the minutes. Quite short, so it shouldn't take too long to read.
I so move.
Representative Daniels moves the minutes. Any discussion, questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have been approved. All right. Today we have the folks from the private, for-profit schools, right?
Thank you, yeah.
Okay. Yesterday we had the nonprofits here.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of completes some of our overviews of what's going on in the world of education. Minnesota being very blessed with a lot of choices for students. And so we're anxious to hear your presentation today. Mm-hmm. And first begin by introducing yourself and identifying who you represent, and we'll go get started.
Sounds good. Chair Norris and members of the Higher Education Committee, my name is Katie Mishakanis, and I am the current chair of the Minnesota Career College Association and work as the Government Relations Director at Rasmussen College. It is my honor to present an overview of the career colleges in Minnesota today. I also want to introduce Randy Morris, the association's lobbyist. Randy has worked with the sector for over 20 years and is around the Capitol daily. So please don't hesitate to grab him or I with questions as the session goes along. While the Minnesota Career College Association represents three institutions focused on career, post-secondary education, there are several others in the state. Today's presentation will focus on statewide and region-wide data pertinent to our sector. MCCA is a volunteer-run organization, so data collection analysis is oftentimes hard and not reliable. For this reason, we have used public data. This data does not break out our institutions, therefore some of the data is MCCA-specific, and in other cases, the data represents our sector as a whole in Minnesota. Minnesota career colleges provide a sound education to a targeted group of individuals in the state that have life experience to make good choices, that fits their needs, but often find themselves in a variety of personal circumstances, whether socioeconomic or demographic, that are seen by experts as high barriers to completion. Whether I'm talking about a young medical assisting student at Rasmussen College or a second career vet tech student at National American University, students that attend career colleges in the state have the same ambitions as all Minnesotans who attend post-secondary schools. They simply want to follow their dream. We want to be as transparent as possible. As I referenced in my introduction, MCCA has three members. The last time I was in front of you in 2015, we had 11 members and represented close to 22,000 students. Today, we represent about 6,800. Throughout the last 2 years, the sector has seen changes. Many schools now select not to enroll students in Minnesota. Some schools have changed their tax status to nonprofit, and some have chosen to close their campuses. As an association that has existed for several decades, the three member institutions, Rasmussen College, National American University, and Academy College, stand dedicated to choice and access for our students and will continue to represent the students who attend our schools and have a voice for students across the sector. We are aware that many of you may have questions about the institutions that were once members and no longer are. We wish to help you with those questions but want to direct you to the institutions themselves and the Office of Higher Education, as the remaining members are only privy to the same public data you all have gotten. Our member institutions have worked with the students impacted by the closures in offering generous transfer policies. My own institution, Rasmussen College, is helping 30 displaced nursing students to finish their degrees according to their original timeline. While we are committed to helping students, we also want to focus on the future and what our schools are doing to serve Minnesotans and meet the needs of the employers and businesses in Minnesota. Our members' goals remain to offer career-relevant programs to students that result in employment after graduation. This slide shows you what some of our program offerings are. As career-focused institutions, we take our programs to offer, we take seriously what program offerings we have. We all use different approaches to determine what programs to offer based on our mission, but all institutions work with business advisory boards, analyze local and national data and employment trends, and look at projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics to help inform decisions on program offerings. I personally participate as the Minnesota Career College Association's representative, board member of the Real-Time Talent Board, and our member schools utilize the resources available through that group that allows real-time data analysis of the jobs in the market. I'm not sure, but I would be confident that Chair Nordis might have that group in to educate you on the work that they're doing, which is actually somewhat funded by state dollars. So, not only do our students work, raise families, and contribute to the workforce, they are also engaged in community service. This slide shows a sample of where our students spent more than 18,000 hours giving back to the community. From career fairs to community service days, national night out events, tutoring at local elementary and middle schools, our institutions believe strongly that in order to have a strong community, all organizations need to give back, and we are clearly dedicated to that goal. As was mentioned before, we continue to strive to offer the programs that are relevant and meet the needs of the Minnesota workforce. We do this by building relationships with employers, being present and engaged with the various groups discussing this, whether it is student and institution participation with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education's working groups, participating in the P20 Council and real-time talent membership. Our institutions are also engaged in local and state chambers and the pipeline industry group. We are committed to bridging the gap of institutional output with employment needs. Not only do we offer relevant programs, our institutions are on the cutting edge of what higher ed will look like in 5, 10, and 15 years. Currently, Rasmussen College is one of 60 institutions from across the country that is participating in a group focused on cracking the code of competency-based education. The idea to reverse the current model of fixed time, variable learning, and focus on fixed learning, variable time, is what we are engaged in. This allows students to learn the same thing at the rate they need. Some may excel through accounting in a few weeks because they worked in their family's store, but need more time in operations. This model allows that, with faculty and classroom interaction and evaluation happening at the same time. Rasmussen has joined many of the country's leading institutions in exploring this delivery model, such as the UW system and Purdue. This model could reduce cost and increase competency. Our schools are dedicated to helping find solutions for the remediation needs of the state and achieving the goal set in statute in 2015 for post-secondary achievement. We continue to look at ways to help students brush up on courses. We provide highly intensive faculty-student interaction, and the results are paying off. Rasmussen alone has seen outstanding results and a decrease in the students' need for further remediation. Most of our students are online. We are confident that we are meeting our student base where they are and ensuring quality education. Some of our institutions also offer hybrid courses, as well as the flipped classroom model that allows a subject matter expert to teach a class of students in classrooms in 5 different states. An example of this is at Rasmussen, we had an individual who worked at Disney World. We have campuses in Florida, and they were able to teach a graphic class to students in Fargo, Brooklyn Park, and Topeka, Kansas, all at the same time. We believe that the non-traditional student that we serve, 27 years or older, single with children, working full-time or multiple jobs part-time, first generation, is one that will continue to be more and more common in our places of learning. We cannot expect that the students of the future will all want to attend a brick-and-mortar school. They simply cannot because of life circumstances, and so we offer them an option. While the student's investment in higher education has been a constant topic of conversation for years, and other sectors have seen tuition increases, our sector has some institutions who have lowered tuition or stayed flat. We have done this through efficiencies, varied classroom offerings, focusing on the careers that are necessary. As mentioned before, the data presented today relies on public data sources. This slide shows where you can find this data and replicate any of the tables and charts. In our attempt to stay transparent, please note that the presented data is public, and we have much more data-rich report that has been validated by a subject matter expert that I'm happy to share with you all individually. We have been an evolving group for the last 6 months. Therefore, the data may be slightly higher or lower today than originally calculated. As a result, lower because of less students and schools, or higher because of inflation. So today is intended to be an overview and an opening for further conversations about our sector, which we welcome. The size of the career college sector in Minnesota can be measured by two metrics, enrollment and degree production. The table on this slide shows the notable presence that career colleges have had in Minnesota. From the peak enrollment at career colleges of 10% of Minnesota's total higher education enrollment in 2009 to the 2016 enrollment number of about 6% of Minnesota's total higher education enrollment, the group continues to contribute to the workforce training necessary for Minnesota employers and the economy. The decline or flat growth in enrollment has occurred in all sectors, but specific to our sector up until 2016 can be attributed to a variety of reasons, mainly the economic recovery as well as qualified enrollment standards implemented at many of our institutions since 2009.
If I can just interrupt for just a second, the printing is very tiny on that graph. I don't know if all members of the committee can see it. So if you just wanted to highlight a couple of those numbers.
Yep. So in 2009, career schools enrollment in Minnesota was 37,033. And in 2016, it was 16,219. So the peak was in 2009, as referenced, and declined steadily at that point in time, as did other sectors. Yep. Okay. I'm happy to replicate this. This is also on the Minnesota Office of Higher Education's website, so I can send this slide to the group, as well as any of the other slides, too. Degree production is the second measurement of sector size. It refers to any certificate or degree type offered by an institution and achieved by the student. The table on your slide is degree production reported to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and compiled by IPEDS as of 2014. What should be noted here is that while we enrolled 6% of the students in Minnesota, our sector accounted for 10% of the degrees conferred in 2012-13. We want to note that this data here is the most up-to-date as of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. We also understand that IPEDS has a preliminary data that would allow us to update this, but until the two marry up, this is the most up-to-date. As policymakers, it is important to be aware of what types of degrees we produce. While we encourage lifelong learning, we are also aware of the shortage of workers and large workforce demand issues focused on the attainment of certificates, associates, and bachelor's degrees. As demonstrated here, 96% of degrees earned by students in our sector were concentrated in those credentials. The student characteristics that I'm going to share come from NAPSIS, which is the National Postsecondary Student Survey, a survey undertaken every 4 years by the U.S. Department of Education. The slides include data from the Regional Survey of the Great Lakes and Plains region. The results include and are indicative of Minnesota enrollments in the sector, and the use of regional data has been confirmed against the NAPSIS data, which is representative of Minnesota. As mentioned, we do rely on public data to help tell our story. We have several slides that indicate the characteristics of students in our sector. I will walk through them with you, adding some color to certain points. In general, our students are older. Almost half of them are over 30 years old. We enroll significantly more women than men. We attribute program offerings to that fact. 26% of our institution's enrollments are in the health sciences. Students in our sector are more likely to indicate that they have a disability. A disability is defined by NAPSIS as someone having a hearing or visual impairment, a speech or language impediment, has a mobility challenge, is ADD, or has a mental or emotional condition or a developmental disability. These students need additional support and find it at our schools. The ratio of faculty to staff is 1 to 12, with additional advising and career placement assistance available as part of our culture. 40% of the students report it to be from a community of color, compared to 31% at the public 2 years and 26% at the private nonprofits. Our students are more likely to be veterans or active military compared to other sectors, but not overly so. Nearly 90% of our students have no military background. We have found our online offerings and flexible, career-focused education model to be similar to what these veterans and active military experience already, and they seek it out. Risk factors in a student's life may affect their experience and success in school. The following student characteristics of our sector demonstrate what percentage of our students have these risk factors. Risk factors, according to NAPSIS, include the following 7 situations and can contribute to persistence or the lack thereof: delayed enrollment, no high school diploma, part-time employment, financial independence, having dependents, being a single parent, or working full-time. Another set of risk factors are, as determined by the TRIO program, include low income, first generation, low income not first generation, and first generation not low income. Generally, students at our school possess many more risk factors than other sectors. 42% of student respondents indicate that they have at least 4 of them. Of the career college students who met TRIO criteria, first generation students comprise over 70% of students at career colleges, the most of any sector. All of these conditions require a substantial amount of support services, something we pride ourselves on. And it is the same conditions that also make it more likely that the student might not succeed even with this support. Or these conditions could influence the kind of work and earnings the students achieve after degree completion. Excuse me. Please note that our students are independent, both in mindset and the criteria that the federal government uses to determine independent status. Almost 35% of them are single parents. There is a full 50% more of who are independent because of their age, meaning they do not have alternative resources to help either. They do not use their parents' income in filling out the FAFSA, and very few get assistance from their parents either. These students are more likely to make important decisions that involve financial trade-offs in thoughtful ways than spending their own earnings on this lifelong investment. Career college students see themselves as employees first and students second, a reverse from the traditional student. Most of these students' jobs are off campus, and they generally earn more than $15,000 annually. Our students delay their post-secondary start on average 4 years, whether for personal or financial reasons, but they are dedicated and know what they want. They are less likely to change their program, and 35% of them already earned a degree prior to entry. Members, our typical student has barriers that make school harder to finish, but they are smart, experienced, and independent people, capable of making thoughtful decisions about their educational choice. Like all Minnesotans seeking a post-secondary degree, our students want to succeed. Our students have the same expectations that students in other sectors have about post-secondary achievement. When I started in the sector, I remember talking to a paralegal student and asked her what she wanted to do with her degree. Her response was, this was her stepping stone. She was going to become a lawyer. Our students dream big. The average career college student tends to earn a certificate or degree much sooner than those in other sectors, due in part to the fact that 70 to 80% of students bring in credits with them when they enroll. Unfortunately, they also bring in about $20,000 in debt. They are highly likely to attend full-time, and in fact, and the fact that we operate in a, on a quarter full year-round instructional calendar helps with time to completion. About 40% of the dependent students entering career colleges are in the lowest earning quartile, with a family-adjusted gross income under $30,000 a year. Over 60% of our students are Pell Grant eligible, and a full 45% of them have parents who either did not complete high school or have only a high school diploma or equivalent. Generally, students from career schools do not come from family backgrounds with strong post-secondary experiences. They lack role models of post-secondary achievement. Almost 46% of students in career schools report that the net price as a share of their income is over 40%. Other sectors indicate less than 25. This explains in part why career school students need to borrow as heavily as they do. It also reflects student choice. Experienced adults are making these schools their choice, even in light of the burden. Our students are dedicated and satisfied. According to the last Minnesota Office of Higher Education Student Satisfaction Survey that our students in our sector participated in, 83% of the students who achieved an associate's degree at one of our institutions would choose the same institution again, and 86% feel the same about their certificate programs. It also shows that the same thoughtful group of students chose us for class schedule, time to degree, and reputation. Over 95% of them were very satisfied or satisfied with time to degree. Time to degree reduces debt and gets the graduate into the workplace faster, the goal, right? Not only are our students satisfied with the timing and program, they are also graduating. As this table shows, career colleges have the highest three-year graduation and transfer rates amongst two-year institutions in Minnesota. Our institutions actively participated in the Minnesota Office of Higher Education's research on retention and completion and strive to find best practices in helping our unique population reach the finish line and achieve their dream of post-secondary degree. As noted, but worth mentioning again, our schools are actively working with the Office of Higher Education to bring to light best practices so that all Minnesotans can complete a post-secondary degree regardless of the barriers life has put in front of them. This slide is of particular interest to policymakers. It demonstrates the median debt for associate's degree. We chose that because that's the degree most of our students graduate with. While the highest debt load occurs in our sector, as we discussed, we have a higher net price as we do not get state appropriations, nor do we have endowments that can buy down tuition. We have reiterated that students make the choice to attend our institutions are making the choice with experience and thoughtfulness and are drawn to our institutions because of schedule, reputation, and time to completion. Also, it should be noted that many of our institutions continue to look for efficiencies that have allowed tuition reductions of up to 18%. This slide demonstrates the student default rates for Minnesota students. While there is always room for improvement, several things should be noted. Career college Minnesota students pay back their debt better than the national average. Our students pay back their debt better than other sectors. And our institutions continue to work with students who historically do not pay back their loans. And those are students who have less than $5,000 in debt, but did not complete their program. We package our students to the cost of education, therefore lowering loan values. We offer significant loan management tools post-graduation, and we have robust reach-out plans to help educate on how to avoid defaulting on your loan. Not only do our students make a conscious choice to attend career colleges and universities, they often do so with big dreams and barriers that are not typical in other sectors' enrollments. The institutions diligently offer programs that will help the student find a different future through innovation and awareness. The institutions and students do so with little to no taxpayer investment. As seen in this chart, and you were given a copy of it,
There's a handout that's much larger than the slide, yes.
As seen in the chart, members, you will see that there are most tax exemptions or taxpayer investments do not extend to our institutions, and not all are extended to our students. We continue to offer relevant programs without direct state appropriations, lower tuition while still paying property taxes and income taxes. We do not ask for help, but serve the citizens of Minnesota.
Can we pause for just 1 second?
Yeah.
Representative Pryor has a question, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to be clear when we were talking about the student loan debt default rates. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the three institutions that are now part of the association.
Nope, that would be all sectors in the all students in the sector per the Office of Higher Education.
Okay, and so that's a larger group than
the three institutions. Yes.
Institutions.
Yep. Okay. And if you wanted the default rates, cohort default rates for the three institutions, we could provide that for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, continue.
Yep. Well, institutions do not benefit from direct aid, students do, but very proportionate to the whole state, a grant appropriation. As is demonstrated by this slide, in 2016, students in our sector made up 8% of the awardees and 6% of the dollars awarded. In conclusion, I thank you for your time. On behalf of our students, I thank you for the investment in the state grant program that 30% of them participate in, and we encourage you to support further investments in the state grant formula. We invite all of you out to our campuses to experience our culture and meet our students, and I will stand for any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Bernardi. You have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask our testifier about, you mentioned someone got their paralegal degree, and their goal was to become, they saw themselves as becoming a lawyer?
Their goal was to become an attorney.
Okay, well, I know a woman, she's a mom, mm-hmm. who got a paralegal degree, and she would make a great lawyer, and she did get it from Rasmussen School, I believe. Will those credits count for her if she does go on to get a law degree, or does she have to start from ground zero?
So, Chair, Representative Bernardi, Rasmussen College is a regionally accredited college. We do not guarantee the acceptance of anyone to a first professional degree. My understanding is most graduate and first professional programs require graduation from a regionally accredited school. So if that person did indeed graduate from Rasmussen College, that would fit the criteria.
Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you. The question I'm trying to get at is what typically are the amount of credits that would transfer to a program? Because I want to know, did that allow them to get in because they saw that they had tenacity and but none of their credits are going to count? Or did they get accepted and most of their program's going to count, and so that'll reduce the time and the cost for them to complete their law degree?
Mr. Connors.
Chair, Representative, they're two completely different programs. To be an attorney, you have to have, I believe, a bachelor's degree. A paralegal degree would be in that undergraduate degree program, so the credits wouldn't be, they may be relevant, they wouldn't be a part of that law degree. I think what, maybe if I can take your question where you're potentially going, is if I was an accounting student at Rasmussen College, I didn't finish my credential degree of a bachelor's degree and wanted to transfer to Mankato State, would those credits transfer? Is that a fair assessment of what your question is? Because a law degree is a graduate degree, so it's outside of that undergraduate paralegal degree, so that those paralegal credits wouldn't necessarily be the same.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Okay, just to get clarification. Okay, let's just say that they have to get a bachelor's degree first before they can go on and get a law degree. Will any of those credits transfer to a university, or will it be starting from ground zero?
Mr. Connors.
I would have to get back to you because I'm not familiar with what law schools require. I think they're still completely separate. So because of the bachelor's degree, that would be what is required. But I want to make sure that we're answering your question. So if I can get back to you, our credits, we don't guarantee credit transfer.
Yeah. Okay, so, right, Mr. Chair, I want to know if the classes they took for paralegal to get us, is it a certification or?
It can be an associate's degree.
Okay. So if it's an associate's degree, will the, is it, it's not an AAS, it's an actually an AA degree, and would those credits transfer to an undergraduate program to get a four-year degree?
It would be up to the receiving institution for the four-year degree part. Because Rasmussen is regionally accredited, that is seen positively, but it's up to the receiving institution. On the reverse end, if someone had gotten an AA degree at Century College and wanted to transfer into a four-year degree program at Rasmussen, we would have the right to review the degree, the transcript from Century, and see where the syllabi matched up and take credits accordingly. But it's we don't guarantee transfer credit. It's up to the receiving institution. The accreditation that Rasmussen has is looked upon favorably, but the transfer credit issue is definitely a much larger one than I think I could answer on my own.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, meet afterwards because I actually do want to get this information because there's probably a general sense for people and what students have experienced. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to discuss that with you after.
Yep, and I'm happy to do that. I would also suggest that I know that there's transfer credit conversations going on within all the within various sectors, so I think I would be happy to continue the conversation.
Thank you.
I'm going to wait for the page to come in here, and I ask them to turn the mics down just a tad. I went out to lunch. Well,
might be turning it down right now.
Yeah, that's possible. Let's move on then with Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at slide 19, and you did note that you have 8% of the recipients for the state grant program, but you're getting 6% of funding. Is that because the amount is lower per student because your tuition is lower?
Representative Schultz, do you want to? I don't know where you are. There you are.
So is that because your tuition is lower, but the state grant amount is lower?
The state grant formula has many components to it. One component is the tuition cap. So the amount of tuition into that would be created by, if it was a student seeking a bachelor's degree, it would be the University of Minnesota's tuition. And if it was a student achieving the bachelor's degree, it would be the Norman price charged at Normandale. Some of what's impacting that, quite honestly, is the student's the student at Rasmussen in general takes on the family component and the independent part of the student component of it. And their incomes might be higher than a dependent student somewhere else.
So on average, you think that the amount is lower per student?
Oh, I know the average. Oh, the average amount that a student at Rasmussen or at Academy or National American receives is lower than other sectors.
Okay, I just have one follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But at the MNSCU two-year colleges, they are also, it goes the wrong way. I mean, they have 46% of the recipients. They only get 19% of the funding. So they're getting less than half. And you're actually getting more than half. So if we just look at the two-year institutions, it doesn't seem to be an issue of fairness. But is that what you were trying to point out?
No. I guess I'm not, when you say half, I'm not seeing the math.
MNSCU two-year colleges, they have 46% of the recipients. They're only getting 19% of the funding.
Right.
So that's less generous in terms of just the percentages than what the private for-profit institutions are
right.
getting.
But in the private for-profits, we also do have students who are getting their four-year degree, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Can you divide that out by two-year, by four-year?
I would rely on Meredith Fergus at the Office of Higher Education. I can't 100% say that. So this is a chart that Meredith compute, so I can ask her if she's able to break that out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if you had any information about geographic location of your students and percentage that are attending physically on campus versus ones students that are using online services.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Connors.
Chair, Representative Pryor, we calculate that about 75% of our students are 100% online. We do have students in nursing and in justice studies specifically who that just would not be feasible. They need to do clinical sites or they need to go to a skills course. So that falls into the 25% as well. So students who are doing hybrid or the flipped classroom model that I referenced, where they go to a classroom and they're taught from someone more virtually.
Any other questions, Representative Lean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sukas, am I pronouncing that correct?
You're close, yep.
Okay, and I apologize. I know you were in Moorhead, and we visited the Rasmussen campus there. But do you have any information about placement rates for the Career College Association, and also do you have any information about whether it be calendar year or academic year, over a year, increases of the costs of education? I mean, just are they going up 2%, 3% a year?
Chair, Representative Lean, the federal government requires all proprietary colleges to have a student investment disclosure on their website. And so if you wanted to look per program at what the cost is, what the first earning salary is, that's all on our website. We have not compiled that as an aggregate amongst the three institutions or for the sector, so I don't have that number for you. But if you had interest, please go to any of our websites and you can see all of that that is disclosed there. As far as the cost of tuition at our sector's schools or as higher ed as a whole, can you?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess either or, with the different individual schools or the association as a whole.
I would say the association's tuition has actually in the last 5 years stayed flat or been lower by 1 to 3%, as higher ed as a whole has gone up.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in effect, it's been going down, decreasing. Can you comment as to the reasons, you know, why that may be happening?
So I can, Chair, Representative Lee, I can speak to the reduction that Rasmussen College has done specifically. I don't want to speak for the other schools, but happy to gather that information. We've lowered tuition twice in the last 5 years. We found efficiencies. Some of our online offerings have helped with that. We've also streamlined some of our curriculum delivery. We've taught out courses that were not relevant or popular. And so all of that helped find those savings that were then passed along to students. I'm happy to gather the information from the other two schools and follow up with you.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, can you just repeat that website? Was it just the individual schools' websites that you said the information was at? Yeah, okay.
Mr. Connors.
Chair, Representative Lean, yes, each school that we have as members and any other school that's in our sector on their website will have a student investment disclosure page. It needs to be easily found. I can tell you on the Rasmussen.edu page, if you go to the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a link to that, and it will tell you program cost. It has a net price calculator. And all schools in the sector are required to have that. Right. Where it's located on the other institutions, I'm not exactly sure, but it is required to be
easy
to find.
Sure.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question. And then can you comment on the placement rates for graduates in their various fields?
I want to be somewhat vague because I don't have those off the top of my head. The success rate of students in field of study ranges anywhere from 85 to 95% per program.
Thank you.
I'm aware of your campus in Moorhead.
Mm-hmm.
How many other sites are there in Minnesota?
Rasmussen College has 8 Minnesota campuses. National American University has 5 Minnesota campuses. And Academy College has 1 location. So amongst the 3 institutions, that is 13 locations. As well as an online presence for both Rasmussen and National American University.
On one of the slides where they're listing courses, the aviation kind of perked my interest a little bit. I know that's an area that a lot of schools have either discontinued or is having difficulty with. I don't know where that's being taught or what it involves, if it's actual preparation for actually flying, or if they're teaching how to fly a drone, or what?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds easy, but I was watching a demonstration just last weekend back home where they were putting on just kind of a free show in the mall, and those things can do loops and twists and acrobats. Like, so anyway, I was just curious where that's being taught and what might be the course.
Yes. Chair Norris, I can speak from personal experience. My husband got a drone for Christmas, and my one-year-old's face got hit by his inability to operate it. He also is a pilot, so I'm not sure that that bodes well for drone owners out there as a whole. Academy College is the institution that offers the aviation, and they do commercial and private aviation preparation.
Okay.
And if you have more interest in it, I'm sure Nancy Olson would be happy to discuss that more. They do face challenges with the cost of providing that education.
The other challenge that I'm aware of is that there's a challenge for pilots.
Yes.
Getting folks interested in becoming a pilot, whether it's private or commercial. So. Mm-hmm. Questions, Representative Jessup?
Thank you, Chair. Ms. McConnell, I know it's not represented on your list, but can you give us any updates on what you're seeing with Globe University and what's happening with their students?
Ms. McConnell?
Representative Norris, Chair Norris, Representative, I actually cannot give you any update because I'm not privy to any of that. As I mentioned in the beginning, they were members of ours. Our institutions have worked with the Office of Higher Education on creating policies and transfer policies to help their students finish in the time that they had originally allotted for. I would encourage, if you have questions, to direct them to either the Office of Higher Education or to the institution itself.
All right. And that's something we can look at or hear from them later. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up on Representative Jessup's question. Are there any other, any of your current institutions that are under investigation?
Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge. That is all I can say. I don't have any purview into the institution, so if you have questions, I would ask you to direct them to the other two institutions, but not to my knowledge.
Questions? Mr. Morris, are you just quietly sitting back here? I don't want to put you on the spot, but we have time. You know, this is perfect time for you to do. Okay, we have another question. Who was it? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you wave your hand. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. Earlier to the question that Representative Bernandi has asked to the transfer issue, according to the Attorney General's website, it says that there is some complications with transfer to public, some of the public institutions. Would you be able to have some clarity for us in how many credits are transferred or what credits could be transferred, what students are expecting, and if that knowledge is forthcoming for them when they're registering?
Chair, Representative, I can tell you, having worked in admissions at Rasmussen College, we are very upfront with students about the fact that we do not guarantee transfer credits. So if you wanted clarity on what public institutions took for credits, I would encourage you to ask them. What students expect is going to transfer or not transfer, I can't speak to, but we are very clear that they take credits at our institution. If they have expectations on going elsewhere with those, they would need to contact the schools that they're looking to go to. Again, transfer of credit is completely up to the school where the credits are looking to be transferred to, not the school that they're being transferred from. So you could be at school A taking accounting, biology, English, and American history and get an A in all of those classes and they're accredited, and you go to transfer because you want to move it to the cities and you took it at school A was in greater Minnesota, and school B may not take any of those credits. That's not to suggest that that school A didn't teach them. It's that school B isn't willing or interested in taking those credits. So that's really up to the institutions. And again, if there's questions about public institutions taking credits, that would be a question for them to answer. I don't have the answer as to why they're not taking the credits. One thing that has been noted is that schools like to see schools that are accredited like them, and so that would be something to look into.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? We thank you for being here today. Very helpful.
Thank you.
And members, we're going to have another meeting next week, Tuesday. The University of Minnesota will be here next week on Tuesday to have an overview, and so look forward to that. And if there are no other questions, comments, or anything else, you're going to get out early. So meeting's adjourned.